Supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Tuesday, January 16th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese hawa slamat for joining the conversation. On today's show, comedy kicks off the new year at the Gold Town with Billy Wayne Davis this Thursday night. We'll talk with Billy. The legislative session opens today. We'll chat with the new state reporter for Alaska Public Media, Eric Stone. KTOO has a new reporter, Clarice Larson, covering all things City of Juneau related. We'll chat with Clarice. And the Choice Fest, short films by, for, and about women, is happening this Friday. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha an kak gunish cheese.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. We are back. Welcome to 2024 and our first show. This Thursday at the Gold Town Nickelodeon, laughter is on tap, and we need some of that after this recent snowstorm madness that we've had here in Juno. Billy Wayne Davis is an American stand-up comedian, writer, and host. He is originally from Crossville, Tennessee, and he has been touring the United States for close to 10 years. Let's listen to a quick clip.
I know how the accent sounds. I'm aware. Sounds dumb. I get it. It's a scam. We're all running. People think we're way dumber than we actually are. It's the opposite of the British accent. Think about it. Yeah, they sound smart, but if you listen, you're like, oh, you're dumb as hell. I get it. There's certain words I shouldn't say. Makes people uncomfortable. Like, my wife is Jewish. Just saying that, people are like, hey, easy. Careful. I'm like, what? I'm married a Jew. People are like, I know you can't say that. Like, you can't say that. We just had a baby. I made a Jew. People, I gotta get out of here. He's trying to get people fired. Don't go over there.
Awesome. That's so great. Well, Billy joins us via Zoom now as he's not quite in Juneau yet. Hopefully he doesn't have to travel in some of this nasty weather that we've been having. Billy, how are you?
I am living the dream, sir. How are you?
I am excellent. It is our first show back, and it's great to think that we have some comedy coming. We need some laughter after we've had some pretty impressive snow. We had I dug my car out this morning. It was over 2 feet of snow, so that was kind of fun.
Oh, wow. Oh. Yeah, I'm coming in. I should get there Thursday morning because I'm flying into Anchorage and then taking the early flight. I've never been to Juneau. I've been to Alaska about 9 or 10 times, but this is my first trip to Juneau.
Oh, excellent. Excited. Okay, I was wondering that. So, well, Gunnath Cheese for being here. It's good to chat with you. And let's learn a little bit about Billy Wayne Davis for people who might be unfamiliar. I know you've had some specials on TV. You've been on Late Night before. You've been around. You've been touring forever. And like you said, you've been to Alaska a number of times, just maybe not down here to Juneau. So what inspired you to become a comedian? How did this all begin? How did this adventure start for you?
I never had the fear of public speaking. And I think some people early on recognized that, some adults, and kind of pushed me to, hey, whatever. And then I didn't really want to do work in a corporation or anything like that. It just didn't sound appealing to me. And that's where a lot of the talking jobs are. And then that's then I had a girlfriend at the time that was like, you should try it, because I watched stand up a lot. I really enjoyed comedy my whole life. And then she said, you seem obsessed, but you should try it. And then I signed up, and between me signing up and me trying it, she and I broke up. But I did find stand up, and it was one of those life affirming moments where you're like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. It was like a calling the first time I was on stage. And it suits me. I really like travel. I like cultures. I like people. So it works together. And Alaska is one of the most unique. So that's why I keep coming up there.
Yeah, it's a pretty great place. And I know you're from Tennessee, and the clip we heard, you're talking about the accent. Obviously the humor that you do comes a lot from what you know, right? That's sort of where people go, observational kinds of humor, things like that. Stand-up is not easy. It's actually, I feel like it's one of the hardest things for people to succeed at, because, you know, people are sitting back and they're like, okay, Billy Wayne Davis, make me laugh, you know? And there's a lot of trial and error and finding the right level of jokes and, you know, how you get to where it is. And so I'm just curious, like, how did you find the kind of humor that you do when you started doing stand-up? Because there's all different ways of doing it, right? So how did you find your way there?
Yeah, I was, I think a couple of things. I got, lucky or fate or whatever you want to call it, but like finding it early in my life really helped. So I think it's, because you have to struggle and you're not going to be very good real quick. So you have to go out there and do it a lot. And it's grueling, kind of. But if you're young, it's just kind of fun because you're just going to different cities, hanging out with new people. And, you know, sometimes you bomb, sometimes you don't. So it's exciting. And I was just fortunate enough to get through that period being young to where I got good enough and savvy enough to make it a career.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It is not easy sometimes. It is. And sometimes you got to seek out weird places, like come up to Alaska and, you know, where there aren't comedy clubs or anything. You're like, I started going to Coots in Anchorage about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
So I've just started going more and more places. So,
well, how did this tour?
And I come in January because that's when you guys need it.
We definitely need it. It's dark, it's cold, and we all need a laugh for sure. How did this particular, I know you can find more at bwdtour.com about you for those who are interested. And of course, you can also search Eventbrite, Billy Wayne Davis Juno, and you'll find the tickets. And just to let you know, there's two shows on Thursday night. The first one is already sold out, apparently. And so tickets for the second one are going fast. And so if you want to get a laugh on to hear some Billy Wayne Davis, get your tickets at Eventbrite to do that. So, but the question I was, wondering about was, how did this tour come about to come to Juneau? How did you, you've been here before. How did you start to, are you going to other places in Southeast as well?
No. This is the only place I'm going in the Southeast.
Okay.
I had reached out to Gold Town the last time it, the logistics, as you can imagine, were tricky, so it didn't work. And this time, it really worked out because I'm going to go. I'm doing Juno Thursday, and because of the weather, I'm taking Friday off, just a travel day to get to Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
and then doing a show in Fairbanks Saturday and
Talkeetna.
I know I've been butchering it the whole time. I'm doing that Sunday. Off a couple of days, and then I'm going down to the Kenai Peninsula. I'm going to Anchor Point and Kenai, and then we're going to do Wasilla and Anchorage.
Wow.
So I love it up there. I just think it's my paradise is what I call it.
Yeah. What is, give us a sense of like what touring is like. I can imagine that it's gotta be, at some points grueling in terms of sort of suitcase living, hotel living, and you're not in a place for very long, you know?
That is, I am in and out of Juno. I fly in, land at 9 a.m. Thursday, and then I fly out Friday morning. But I I think I'm one of those people too that, you know, when you walk into a bookstore, you're just like, there's just not enough time to read all this. Not overwhelmed, but just like, just more like, I want to read it all. I feel the same way in record stores, and I feel that way about places on the planet. And so there is a rush to go see as many places as I can. But I have a family and two kids now. So the road is a little harder than it used to be just because of the mental aspect. I'd much rather be with my kids and my wife at home, but I've carved out a nice way to make a living for myself. So, and I enjoy, it's therapeutic to go tour. So the way I toured has changed, I guess, where I'm not going out for like a grueling weeks at a time, months at a time, and then coming back. I used to do that, and that was, it's,
is that when you do like something 200 nights a year kind of thing, you're just constantly on the road and you're just always out and about, and now are you able to do it a little bit more specifically, like you're coming to Alaska, sounds like, for a 5-city or so tour there, and then do you continue on, or do you go home for it, but do you take breaks and go see the wife and kids and stuff like that?
Now, for sure, the way I've changed it is that I'll go do a run 10 to 14 days at the most,
mm-hmm.
and then go back for a couple of weeks. And then if I need to, I'll do it. You know, like this one is, yeah, I'm doing this. It's like 10 days, I think. And then next month, I'm only gone a couple of days, but my wife's going to go with me. She does comedy too sometimes. So we're gone for 3 or 4 days. And then we, you know, I have writing projects and voiceover stuff too. So like that really supplements, so I don't have to go tour as much, which is really nice.
That is nice.
But don't get me wrong, I really love touring. But you know, when my kids are grown and gone, I'll probably go head back into it a little harder, just because I do enjoy it. But it is, you know, when I was young, I didn't foresee having kids being like, oh, I'd rather be with them than out on the road being a,
it is that. It is funny how you have, you know, when you're younger, you have none of those responsibilities, and then you start having a family and children, and you start to see what's important, and then you're like, how do I balance that with the thing I also love to do and also that I make my living at? But like you said, it sounds like you've got other things too, voiceover and other projects that you do, some writing that you do, to sort of balance that all out and make a career out of it, because not everybody can do that. It's one that a lot of people aspire to, they're interested in, but piecing it all together and at the same time having a family, I mean, that's commendable. I definitely think that's a wonderful thing that you've been able to put together for yourself.
Well, thank you. I'm quite proud of my little life we have here. So,
and I guess that
I get to go places and come back and see my family.
But I think the other thing too is that having kids, I mean, that's just fodder for more material, right? I mean, that the kids are hilarious.
I have a 14-year-old and a 5-year-old. And
oh my God.
It is, they're both going through changes constantly, and it is hilarious.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So do you do the thing where you take, like, you know, so you obviously the humor, you know, you push it further, you take maybe a real life instance and then you kind of like blow it up into a joke and make it a little bit funnier. And do you get inspired that way, or do you, or some things just actually observational that, you know, like the clip we heard, you know, I mean, in terms of that, are you taking that to the extreme in the joke, or, you know what
no,
I mean?
That is, I wish I was. I think a lot of mine comes from like, from perceptions I had that weren't correct.
Ah.
And perceptions that a lot of humans have that I think are wrong. And I kind of tell it through those kind of stories.
Ah.
And self-realization and being like, oh, I'm a dingbat, or, you know, that kind of stuff, or like the systems we use and pointing out how silly they are sometimes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I find the whole thing, I find all of life kind of funny and always have. And the older I get, the more I realize like, that's kind of like a lot of people don't which I, so that seems exhausting to me.
Well, I think in the world we live in today, we need a little bit of humor. And it sounds like you're just the right person to bring us into the new year with some laughs at the Gold Town. It's at the Gold Town, Nick. It's Billy Wayne Davis. You can go to bwdtour.com. Again, there's two shows, but the first show is sold out already. I think that's the 7:30 show. And then you're going to hop right back on stage, take a quick bathroom break, and do another show at 9. There's tickets for that available, and you can find it all at Eventbrite. The easiest way to use Eventbrite is search. So just search Billy Wayne Davis Juno, and you'll find out more. And of course, you can also find out things at goldtownnick.com as well. Billy, it's really been great to have you on for just a few minutes.
Thank you for having me. This is a pleasure.
Got you over Zoom. You got your Alaska Grown shirt on, and I do. You know, we're going to welcome
my buddies, Portugal the Man, hooked me up with this.
Nice. I love it. Well, I hope you come and you can warm us up, bring some of that southern weather. And
I'm coming. I want to meet all y'all.
Yeah,
I want
to meet all y'all. So good. Well, thank you so much, Billy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Have a great one.
Okay, you too. Good. Sheesh. All right, up next, the legislative session begins today. We'll chat with new Alaska Public Media state reporter Eric Stone next. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today marks the beginning of the Alaska legislative session, and Eric Stone recently joined Alaska Public Media as their new state reporter. Eric covers state government, tracking the Alaska legislature, state policy, and its impact on all Alaskans. You can reach him or give him tips or ask questions, anything you want, at estone@alaskapublic.org. Eric's a little busy today, as it's the first day, but I had a chance to chat with Eric last Friday to get a preview of what we can expect from this legislative session. Here's that interview. Thank you for being here, Eric. How's it going?
Things are good. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So you're new to Alaska Public Media as the state reporter, but you're not new to Alaska reporting. Will you share with us a little bit about where you're from, your background, and how you wound up covering state government being based here in Juneau?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I am new to Juneau, but as you said, not new to Alaska. I spent the last 4 years or so at KRBD in Ketchikan. I worked my way up to a news director there, and I really enjoyed, I love KRBD. I still love KRBD. I'm still a member of KRBD. And, you know, during my time at KRBD, I spent a lot of time reporting on anything and everything, right? You know, it was for a lot of my time there, it was a one reporter newsroom.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All stories.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, a lot of times legislative stuff came up. There was this one time, I met this woman, Eileen Casey, at the Ketchikan Pioneer Home. And she was having trouble paying her bills. She was having trouble affording her care at this state-run assisted living home. And that, you know, I found her story very compelling. And I spoke with her, and there was this bill in the legislature that was, you know, hoping to reduce Pioneer Home rates, and they would have made it, you know, a lot easier for her to afford her room. And that was, you know, one of the first places I interacted with the Alaska legislature, and I really enjoyed it. When you're a local reporter in a small community, you spend a lot of your time covering meetings, and some people hate that, but man, I love meetings because every meeting is chock full of great stories. And what is a legislature but a series of meetings full of great stories? And obviously the work is so incredibly important, and it affects people all over the state. So when I saw that this job was open, I thought there's, you know, it's just not an opportunity I can pass up. And I've always loved Juneau. I've visited several times before I moved here, and I've always loved it.
That's great. And so we are lucky that you are able to be sort of housed in at KTOO as Alaska Public Media, as a sister station, a public media station, as is KRBD down in Ketchikan and a bunch of Southeast stations. But obviously starting on the 16th, you won't be here a whole lot, will you?
I'll spend most of my time reporting from the Capitol. I've got a desk in the press room, but I'm planning to spend most of my time in committee rooms and meeting with legislators and, you know, keeping track of all of the very important issues that affect Alaskans' everyday lives.
That's so great. And what is it that, I mean, I know you found it in Ketchikan by reporting on some stuff, but what is it about like reporting on state government that really sort of drives you?
I mean, it's such a wide mandate, right? It's such a wide beat. It's a beat that you know, covers every square inch of the state, including a lot of submerged tidelands, right? You know, if you consider everything, it's an opportunity to tell all kinds of different stories while still concentrating on decision makers who make a difference in people's lives. And you know, honestly, there's a little bit of me that's like, well, I've always wanted since a kid to be. I grew up just loving White House political reporting and Capitol Hill political reporting.
Right.
And when I went to school at Rice University in Houston, I was like, I'm going to be a political journalist. In the years since, I've found that maybe don't want to live in Washington, but it is nice to do something that sort of approximates that while living in the most beautiful and wonderful place in the world.
That's so cool. And I guess you get to learn and see and hear all the different topics that are covered by the legislature and, you know, the different things that are coming up and all the things that get governed there. So that, I mean, the education that you get while reporting is probably pretty amazing.
And absolutely.
Sharing all that with the entire state through Alaska Public Media is really grand. So, all right, let's get into some specifics. Since we're in the middle of the legislature, the second session of that, they've already organized, right? Because last year, that was a big deal. Like getting organized last year seemed like it took them a while to figure out who was going to run what and, you know, who was going to be on which committees and stuff. But that's set right now, right? Or do they re-go over that?
No, that all more or less carries over from the last session. There are a couple of changes sort of around the margins. There was a representative for District 40 who resigned to take another job, and there was a new legislator that was appointed there.
So maybe a little less business or a little less like organizing, and they can get down to business maybe a little bit quicker.
That's right. Yeah. So the caucuses are already put together. There's not going to be a whole lot of jockeying over, you know, who's going to wind up with the majority versus the minority. To remind folks, there is a 23-member majority in the House. It's led by Republicans. Some Democrats and Independents have joined that. And then there's also in the Senate, there is a 17-member supermajority. That's 17 out of the 20 members of the Senate. So that's sort of where things stand right now. And the way it shook out last year, the way that majority in the Senate came together is it's a lot of very strong Democrats and strong Republicans, people who feel very strongly about certain issues. But essentially what the Senate president said when they organized last year is, you know, we're not going to work on controversial social policy issues. So I wouldn't expect tons and tons of super hot button cultural issues necessarily to come up or at least make it through the Senate. And yeah, that's more or less where things stand.
That's interesting. Okay. So now we know that the folks pre-file a lot of their bills, and there's a long list that you can look at on the akledge.gov website of all the different bills that have been pre-filed. But what are you seeing as maybe a couple of the main topics or themes this year that we as the public want to know about? What's going to impact us?
Well, the main themes for this topic are going to be pretty similar to what they were last year. And education funding is going to be a huge, huge fight. The governor submitted his budget in mid-December and did not include an increase in the formula funding for public schools, nor did he include an extension of one-time funding that was included at the end of last year's legislative session. So at this point, that's really shaping up to be one of the big fights. I spoke with some leaders in the Senate shortly after the governor's budget came out, and Senator Stedman called the figure artificially low in the governor's budget. He expects it to grow quite a bit. And at the same time, the governor's budget has a $987 million deficit, nearly $1 billion on a roughly $10 billion budget or thereabouts. So that's a pretty big gap. The governor's budget includes full permanent fund dividends, full statutory permanent fund dividends calculated under the 1980s era statute that would, you know, they would essentially be more than 3,300, 3,200, somewhere in there. The folks that I'm talking with say, don't expect that to make it all the way through.
Happening the last couple of years. He's tried to promise that,
right.
That we were going to get a full dividend, or that's what he wanted.
Right.
I'm sure there will be the discussion around a full permanent fund dividend based upon that older formula. But I don't see how, I don't know what's going to be possible there. That's the big question always, right? I mean, everybody would love more money in their pocket, but we also, as an individual, I think about it that way. Yeah, sure, I'd love to have a full based on that formula, but I also don't want to, you know, break the bank, as it were, you know, so.
I'd put it this way. Don't count on a $3,300 check in October or whenever the permanent fund dividend hits. It's likely going to be quite a bit lower, but the final number is anybody's guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we'll just be, you'll probably be following that. I'm sure we'll see tons of stories around that as the spring rolls around and as this session continues on. Just to go back for one second about education, is there anything else that we need to know about that in terms of, I know we've seen some stories recently already about that formula that everybody talks about in terms of how it's for each student. That's going to impact every school district around the state, right?
Right. Yeah. So the main fight is over what's called the base student allocation. That's a portion of the funding formula that's more or less per student funding. It's then multiplied by all of these different things, so it doesn't actually totally match the number of students, but that's the idea. It's more or less per student funding. It's been more or less flat for the last half decade or more. It's been, I think at least since 2017 that it was substantially raised. Of course, there was the Alaska Reads Act a couple of years ago that boosted it by $30, but that's that was not an enormous increase. I believe that took it from 650 per student to 680 per student. But school districts are, you know, around the state say they need more. They're saying that inflation is basically eating away the value of the base student allocation, so that, you know, if you continue to fund it at the current level, that's functionally a cut. Now, I would be surprised if there is not some extra education funding that makes it into the final budget. Like I said, as Senator Stedman called education funding in the budget artificially low, so I would expect there to be some funding that makes it in there. Of course, the final amount is going to be up to the House, the Senate, and the governor.
Mm, wow. So that's going to be some interesting things to follow throughout this session. Sounding like education, PFD, which seems to have been in the news the last few years, every year.
People always want to know how much money they're going to get. And you know what? I do too. I want to know too.
Everybody wants to know, but we won't know that number for a long while yet. Probably not till May or so, I would think.
Probably not till near the end.
Yeah, probably near the end. All right. So I know we'll be looking out for all of your stories on Alaska Public Media. But also a lot of those stories will be published here on KTOO.org as well. It's really a pleasure to have you in the building here. Is there other things that you might have reporting wise that don't have to do with the legislature that are going to be that anything we can be looking forward to that's coming up? Or is this going to be like your main focus for the next little bit?
Well, once the session gets underway, I imagine that's going to consume a large portion of my time, if not all of my time or more time than I have. but you know, there are a number of things to pay attention to that are not necessarily legislative, but you know, we've had this ongoing issue with food stamps, with folks taking a long time to get their food stamp benefits. And you know, issues like that, issues of short staffing throughout the state government system, from the Alaska Marine Highway System to various state agencies, those are major things that impact the way that service is delivered, and the things that that state government is able to do. So those will be things that I will continue to track, although I imagine most of my reporting will focus on stuff that's happening in the Capitol.
Well, that's great. Well, we look forward to hearing your voice on the air as well as reading your stories on the websites. Of course, you can follow Eric, or if you have tips or anything, you can email him at estone@alaskapublic.org. Last question, I always like to ask this question. Is there a favorite hobby, book, or podcast that you could share that you love?
So I'll go with the podcast.
Okay.
I'm sorry to pick a pretty basic answer, but man, Planet Money. Every time I put on a Planet Money, I learn something new. I am delighted. It shows me how the world is connected. It's a lot of arcane, you know, obscure elements of the financial system or the law that have very real world consequences for a lot of people. And it's a lot of fun.
That is so fun. I wonder, I'm sure they've probably covered like the one that everyone gets confused by, EBITDA, right? You know, earnings before income, tax, depreciation, and amortization. Do they talk about stuff like that?
It's really a podcast about the economy, which is a podcast about the entire world.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
Well, that's one of the things I love. I mean, like I love, everybody says like, oh, I love all kinds of music. I really do love all kinds of music. I'll listen to anything. I like variety.
Right.
And Planet Money has tons and tons and tons of variety. And it's always fun and upbeat and you'll learn something.
Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you today, Eric Stone, covering state government for Alaska Public Media, and Gwyneth Cheese for being here today. It's a pleasure.
I was glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO. The application for the PFD runs January 1st through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and joining me now is KTOO's newest reporter, Clarice Larson. Gwyneth Cheese for being here today. Clarice, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent. Well, first thing I want to do is I just want to play one of your fun stories that you did recently, and it was called Junoites Celebrate the New Year with a Cold Dip. Since this is our first show back, it seemed like that would be an appropriate one to play. So let's listen to that story.
Five-year-old Axel Bowling didn't have much to say after plunging in Juno's icy cold ocean water on Monday afternoon.
It was really cold. I'm just cold.
But for his mom, Amanda Triplett, running into the water with her son, alongside dozens of other people, signified the start of a new chapter.
It is cold, that initial shock, but you come out afterwards, everyone's kind of smiling and bundled up, and yeah, it's really fun to come out and be here with the Juno community.
More than 100 people spent the first afternoon of the new year partaking in the polar bear dip, a three-decade-long New Year's tradition in Juno. The countdown began under cloudy skies with the temperatures in the mid-30s. At 1 p.m. sharp, the crowd of brave souls crashed into the waters of Auk Bay. For most, it was a mad scramble in and then back to one of the handful of fires scattered across the rocky beach. That was the case for high school sophomore Miranda Stickert and her friends, who were the only three people who showed up out of their entire cross-country team. They said they didn't mind because so many other people showed up.
It's so hype that everyone's here.
A few people managed to wade in the waters for a bit longer. Half a dozen Capital City Fire rescue swimmers were there alongside them in case of emergency. Pete Boyd says the rescue suits aren't the warmest to wear in the chilly waters, but he says it's important to be there in case anything goes wrong and to support the community.
It's just really nice to get out with and show that CCFR is part of the community, that we're here to help out everybody.
Boyd says there were no reported injuries or emergencies at the dip on Monday. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
That's just a really cute story to begin the year, right? I mean, in terms of having fun, but I know that's not necessarily your beat. We'll get into that in just a minute, though. But first, I thought it might be fun, since you're new here, to share with the listeners a little bit about your background, where you're from originally, and then sort of how you found your way to KTOO.
Yeah, I'm from Minnesota, born and raised till I was 18. And then I went to Montana and I got my BFA in journalism. And I always knew I loved writing. I always knew I just loved reporting. And I had gotten a job with the Juno Empire straight out of college. And so I worked at the Empire for a year and a half. And it was such a great experience to be in Juno and learn about the community. And so transitioning into KTOO, I'm very familiar with the coverage that I'm doing. And it's really great to expand what I already know and continue reporting in that way.
That's awesome. And so what kinds of reporting will you be doing? Is there a specific area? I know you're sort of like the city person. You're going to be covering all things city of Juno.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that I have Katie Anastas to work with. She does a lot of city coverage as well. But a lot of my beat is going to be covering municipal meetings, which are not so fun to sit through, but I try to make it as interesting for... Actually, I should rephrase that. I really like sitting through them personally, but I feel
Eric like meetings too, he said.
Yeah, I actually love them. It's so fun, which sounds backwards, but most people probably would not enjoy sitting in a sometimes really hot room for like 4 hours listening to people debate. So it's really fun to try to condense that into a story. And so that's a lot of what I'm doing. But I also really like photography. And so I try to, you know, force our editor to let me take photos for other reporters when I have the chance.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. We don't have an official photographer. So it's nice that that we're able to have other people on staff who are interested in doing that. That's kind of cool. So you are going to be mostly, so you're just like splitting the city duties with Katie a little bit, and then you're picking up these other fun sort of community stories like the cold dip and things like that.
Yeah. Katie, I mean, my interests lie in, you know, just hard nuts and bolts municipal coverage, but Katie really likes education. And so we kind of just, you know, time and whatever works best for each other, we usually decide who's going to cover what. But she likes priority over school district stuff, and I like priority over municipal coverage. So that's kind of where we lie. And then also just fun community stuff is when stuff comes about, I try to grab onto it when I
can. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you've been here since, how long have you been here so far?
Summer of 2022. So
no, I mean at KTOO.
Oh, like a little over a month.
Not a little
long.
Over a month.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, we were on break for many weeks for Juno Afternoon. So this is a sort of a newish thing for me to have you here. So that's really great. That's awesome. So what kinds of things can we look forward to in terms of reporting coming up? Obviously, I love that you're going to sit through those meetings and sort of distill it down for us to what we need to know. So that's really great. But are there other things that we can be looking forward to as well in terms of what you're going to be reporting on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm currently working on a few stories about buildings, which are, you know, buildings don't sound fun, but they are to me. And I think people are going to be excited about what I'm talking about, these apartment complexes and such. But city-wise, we have a few months out, but we're going to be hitting the budget pretty soon, which is going to be really interesting, especially going into this coming election for the city, which is a mayoral election, which is really exciting. And there's going to be a lot of things at play, especially with, you know, the budget plays into a lot of what happens in the election. So I'm looking forward to that. And so people should, you know, be on the lookout for the budget coverage that I'll be doing.
Absolutely. Because you just did you were doing a story on the school funding, right? In terms of the Juno's delegate at the town hall that we had recently, you did a little bit of a topic on that.
Yeah, I was there at the city meeting originally when they announced, city manager Katie Kester announced the deficit, which wasn't really out yet. And so I had, you know, told Katie Anastas here, and she had written a story. And then, I listened to the legislature.
Yeah, that's going to be just interesting to follow, right? Like, as you said, as the budget comes around and all these numbers are thrown around. So it's really great that you all are going to be breaking it down for us and telling us what we need to know. So it's really a pleasure to, I just wanted to take a couple minutes and say hi to you and welcome you to the air. And we're going to be hearing your voice and reading your stories on KTOO.org. And you can follow Clarice Larson there. And then I just always like to end, like I did with Eric, is there a favorite book, podcast, or a hobby? You mentioned photography, so that one's out. You got to give us something different now. But a favorite book or podcast or another hobby that you have?
Yeah, I'm a big cross-country skier, obviously, from Minnesota. I actually skied to work today.
Yeah, I saw your skis in the newsroom.
Yeah, I skied from South Douglas, and most of my reporting, I'm coming up with a story, most of my reporting today, I skied there to get people to talk to me because I don't want to drive my car. It's not the best car. So I love skiing. It's a pleasure to ski.
We've had some wild weather, so I can imagine that the way to get around cross country skis just as good as any other way, probably safer actually, especially with all the videos I've seen online of down south where cars are just piling up in these terrible, terrible conditions. So Clarice, thanks so much for coming in and sharing with us. I'm sure we'll have you on the show again, and we look forward to your coverage here on KTOO.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Awesome. Okay, great. So up next, Choice Fest, a festival of short films by, for, and about women, is happening this Friday. We'll have all the details here next on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. Listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at KTOO.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Friday, Choice Fest, a festival of short films by, for, and about women, is happening. And we have in the studio with us right now Amy Keston and Lorraine Jones, who are here to share a little bit about this festival. Gunath Cheesh, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Now, I know that people might remember this. We should talk about this, that we used to have this as Luna Fest, right? And that was from years past.
2008 to 2023. And 2 years of that, 2021 and 22, we did them online, which was because of COVID,
right?
Not all of that. So 2023 was our very best year when we were back in person last year. And then the Luna Bar people decided, well, they sold the company, and the new people decided not to do the Luna Fest films anymore. So Amy has found an organization called Women Make Movies.
Nice.
And she's been working with them, and we've got some new short films to show.
Awesome. So, Amy, tell us a little bit about Women Make Movies. How did you find them?
How did that come about? I want to give a shout out to Colette Costa because of course once I knew that we weren't going to be able to utilize films from the Luna Fest company, I immediately started texting and speaking with Colette, and she just started making suggestions with films, many of which were full length. And we've always had short films and thought that would draw the audience in to replicate that. So one of the recommendations was a nonprofit called Women Make Movies, and they're out of New York City, and they have about 700 films in their library.
Oh, wow.
And they're films by women, about women. And we say for women, but we really encourage men to come to this event. Many men, probably most men, are pro-choice, and we want them to be there supporting their partners, their sisters, their mothers.
Absolutely, whoever.
So basically, I just put in categories, pro-choice, women's rights, started just spitballing around and seeing what could I find. And I started viewing the clips. And I started sending the clips to other people on the board to see what they thought of these. And
nice.
So together we came up with five films and worked closely with Women Make Movies, who basically gave us the films to rent at a nonprofit deal, much less than a for-profit company would be showing them.
Right, because we should mention this is a fundraiser,
yes,
for the Juno Pro-Choice Coalition, mm-hmm, and there'll also be, so it's the, and that's how it's been, mm-hmm, all the time, right? It was it just has. That Luna, yes, Bar and the Luna Fest, mm-hmm, was the ones that where you would get the films, and it was sort of a national thing, right? That sort, right, of film festival was all the way around the country. So is this now something that you all are doing specifically? Because I know that the Luna Fest films were like a collection that they put together and they played them in different cities. But now you're sort of taking on that work yourself to sort of, curate these series of movies, mm-hmm, based upon, what did you say? They had 700 films?
Yes, 700 films.
Oh, man. So, you've got years of content.
Yes, and all sorts of topics.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, Luna Fest, I think people have always enjoyed them. There's always been some fun, some light, some funny.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to find a whole lot of light and funny. And in talking to everybody, you know, everybody sort of was in agreement that, or people would come back with the comment, well, things are not very light in this country right now when it comes to women's rights, women's health. This is where we're at,
you know, right,
the reality,
right,
of Roe versus Wade being overturned.
Well, I guess the zeitgeist of, you know, what people are writing and what they're making and the stories that they're telling, they are going to reflect the current world that we're in, mm-hmm, right? And there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. But this serves as a fundraiser. I just want to mention,
yes,
that. And you'll also have a silent auction. Do you want to talk, mm-hmm, about the silent auction a little bit, one of you?
Sure. Amy's been really busy collecting all of those things too. We have a wide, wide variety of items, over 100 items she's collected. And they go everything from...
Wait, can I guess? Can I guess?
Sure.
Because Juno's so good at the silent auction, but you have a whale watching tour in there.
No, we don't.
Oh, okay. You have dinner at, yes, some fancy restaurant.
We do have dinner at Spice.
Spice, yes.
We have dinner at LeRae's house.
LeRae's house?
Yes.
Are you going to make something?
Not me. I'm not a cook. You don't want to eat my food. I set the table and I do the dishes.
I see.
My husband is fabulous cook, and it's a gourmet dinner for six.
Oh, wow.
Worth at least $100 a person. So,
wow.
We have been doing dinners for many organizations over the years and have never had a bad dinner.
That's awesome. I love those home dinners. Those are so fun.
He loves to work around people's dietary needs. So we've done gluten-free. We've done everything. And we have some fabulous wines that we will also serve,
nice,
with the dinner. So
that sounds so good. Well, yeah, that's going to go for a pretty penny, I think. So, yeah. I'm sorry, what else is in the list of the items then?
There's books, there's jewelry, there's...
earrings, right? There's earrings. Probably some, yes, earrings. Juno's earring game is always on,
yes,
point.
Yes, there's Rainbow Foods always gives us a very generous gift certificate.
Nice.
So we have several people offering yoga classes and a Pilates class and lots of wonderful art by local artists and some art that people have been hanging in their homes and they've downsizing and ready to pass it on as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what kinds of, let's go to the films. Let's talk a little,
sure,
bit about the films. What kind of stuff are we going to be viewing?
Well, we're starting with a film actually from the 1970s.
And oh, wow.
It's called Abortion and Women's Rights. And it gives you a history of abortion rights. And, of, you know, most of you may know that Roe versus Wade hadn't been passed yet in 1970. So
right, right.
It's going to talk about the history. And our second one is also a historical type film. It's called Without a Whisper. And it is a story of the influence Indigenous women had on the beginning of the women's rights movement in the United States.
Oh.
So I think that I'm excited about that one,
yeah,
to see, because that's not something that you hear people talk about necessarily.
Right. No.
So those are the two historical ones. And we will have then a intermission where people will continue to bid on items.
Yes.
And we have a special. LeRae had the idea of having a special.
We're going to have cookies. And fudge and that
kind of finger food desserts to bid on.
And we will close that piece of the auction early so that people can then have something to eat during the second half of the films.
And maybe share with others who are there.
Yes, yeah, and easily share. That's why.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Little things. And we'll also have either sodas or water to sell, and
popcorn,
and the popcorn machine.
Of course, yeah.
So we're at Centennial Hall.
Okay.
Last year we were still at the Jack, but this year we're at Centennial Hall again, which is where we've been most of the 16 years that we've done this.
Yeah, just and, off that break last year while they were redoing their
and
facility.
And our 2 years of being virtual.
Oh, true.
So, we're really excited about doing this.
That's great. And then the second half of the program.
Yeah. And then the second half are three other films. The first one is called Unlearning Sex. And that is a film that's about sexual assault and trauma. It's a very personal film where people are talking about their experiences and their experiences getting help. And it's told mainly through the experience of women, Black women, Indigenous women, women of color. So that's, you know, going to be some heavy stuff for sure. But we're hoping maybe seeing that will encourage some women to, you know, maybe get some help if they haven't for some of their traumatic experiences.
Absolutely.
We also have one called Abortion Helpline. This is Lisa. And it takes place at a Philadelphia abortion helpline and how counselors deal with the calls.
Oh, okay.
And then we're going to end on a light note.
Okay.
It's a really sweet film called Love, Barbara. And it's a tribute to a pioneering lesbian experimental filmmaker, Barbara Hammer. And it's told through the lens of her partner of the a partner of 30 years. And that's kind of, we're going to end on a light note.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, so, that sounds like a really fascinating evening, a wide collection of stories. I love the idea of the historical part of it and then sort of bringing it modern and also like how people might be able to be inspired to get help or help others who might be in the same situation. And it's a fundraiser and silent auction for the Juno Pro-Choice Coalition, which you can go to junochoice.com for more information on that. And then the tickets for the event, let's remind everybody, it's this Friday. It's from 5:30 to 9:30. It's at Centennial Hall. And there is a link on junochoice.com. And that's the best way to do it because the link to the actual tickets is it's tickettailor.com. And there's a bunch of other stuff there. But the best way to do it is to go buy your tickets by getting onto junochoice.com and then clicking the link in that first story there. And you'll have a wonderful time at this event on Friday. I love the fact that because the, you know, Luna Bar folks decided not to continue, that you took the initiative to make it happen again and find and do the research and figure out another company to work with. And it sounds like Women Make Films is a great resource for that and to still be bringing this to the community. So
we're excited to work with them in the future. For years to come.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah.
All right. Well, Larae, Amy, thank you so much for coming and telling us all about that. Is there anything else that we need to say?
We hope you'll be there, Boston.
I love it. I love it. It's this Friday, 5:30 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Go to junochoice.com, Larae.
And get your tickets.
And get your tickets now. That is the thing to do. Okay. Thank you so much for coming in. Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Blackwater Railroad Company, Bartlett's Aphasia Group, and UAS's upcoming job fair. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ok Bay 91.7. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback, give ideas, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Thanks and have a glorious safe, and hopefully not so wet Juno evening.